It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night here on a Tuesday. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Always on the 101.3 ESPN app, that free download in the Google Play Store or in the iTunes Store as well. And now also on your Amazon Echo, all you need to say is enable 101.3 ESPN. And then once you do that one time, all you need to say is open 101.3 ESPN. 25-minute show today, a short show, so we'll get right to it momentarily. Remember, Red Sox and Rays coming up. We'll have the lineups for you in about 15 minutes from now. Chris Sale goes to the mound for Boston. Tonight, trivia, Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30. You know exactly where it is. Look, it's a rainy night out. You want something fun to do. You want to get out. Well, come hang out with us. It's perfect. If you are a college kid still in the area from UVM, St. Mike's, nothing else to do, then come find yourself a trivia. If you are a college kid back home from break from a school out of town, well, welcome back to the area. Trivia night, Burger Bar in Colchester. If you're a local out of college, come hang out with us, watch the games. We got people of all ages, and we got a ton of big groups that come out every week. So come on and find us. Trivia night, Burger Bar Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30, half-price appetizers, and tons of great deals on drinks. They're going to have specials on Long Trail, which I love, specials on Gosa, specials on Coors Light, Blue Moon. They've got specials on everything. That is the spot to be, and it is tonight, 7:30 to 9:30. If you want to get in, you can, 802-655-6672. That's how you find us on the Town Fair Tire text line as well. As for what's coming up today, we'll get you some notes on Giants OTAs, and we will get you those lineups. But first, I'm not concerned or disappointed about the Celtics yet. And I understand yet leaves you some wiggle room to say that you're concerned or to say that you're upset with the way Boston's played, but I'm not. And Colin Cowherd, who I love, Colin Cowherd is, if you ask me, Brady, who's your role model in this business? Who's the guy that you would ultimately like to meet, pick his brain, be compared to? It would be Colin Cowherd, and that's a far-reaching high goal, but I disagree with what Colin had to say today. So Colin Cowherd was talking today on The Herd on ESPN Radio, or on rather formerly on ESPN Radio. He was talking to The Herd on Fox Sports Radio over on AM 960 The Zone, and he had this to say.
I think next year we have two dynasties in the NBA. The Warriors are the current dynasty, and the Boston Celtics begin a 10-year Eastern Conference dynasty. I just made a big mistake last night. I expected Boston, I don't know, to be able to win one road game, you know, one against LeBron James.
So Colin says he's disappointed in Boston, that Boston failed him last night, because in his mind, he's got Boston pegged to be a dynasty, and he made a mistake thinking they could start that dynasty a year early. I disagree. The Celtics are playing with house money right now. What they have done has been exceptional. If you're going to be disappointed at a dynasty in the making that failed you, then that would be the Philadelphia 76ers. I still think it was a year too early for them also, but they were the team with expectations. They were the team with Joel Embiid, with Ben Simmons, with the names, with the first round picks, with the multiple number one picks in the draft. They were the team that had the expectations that if they were going to ascend quicker than we expected, it was going to be Philly. Boston dispensing of them has instantly made the Celtics team overachievers. Maybe even beating Milwaukee had them at partly overachievers. I'm not disappointed in whatever happens with this Celtics series. This season is going to be widely considered a success, ultimately. It can hurt in the moment if they don't win this series or if they don't win the championship, but ultimately this season is a success, and ultimately when you step back from it, whenever it ends, it's going to be amazing. But let's just look at last night in general. I walk out of that game being more encouraged than discouraged. Look at what happened last night. The Celtics lost by 30 in Game 3. They lost by 9 yesterday. So there were some positive adjustments made last night by Boston that leads me to believe that they're trending back in the positive direction, and they're going home to where they're 9-0 this postseason. I have to be encouraged about the adjustments that this team made. The Cavaliers hit 17 threes in Game 3. They didn't hit 10 in Game 4. So more adjustments were made by the Celtics to limit the effects of the three-point line. LeBron James had 12 assists in Game 3. He had 3 in Game 4, including only 1 in the second half. Now, they didn't take LeBron James out of the game. He still scored 44. But they made the Cavaliers play a different way than they had been, and I like that moving forward. I started out yesterday wondering, why is Terry Rozier guarding LeBron James so much? And I was really befuddled by it, and I was mad about it. I was watching with Jess, and I said, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? LeBron will go off on Terry Rozier, and he'll get whatever he wants. And he ended up doing just that. Well, Brian Windhorst made it clear today on Golic and Wingo that was a good strategy employed by the Celtics, and here's why.
But one thing I thought Brad Stevens did tonight, Scott, that I think you'll continue to see, he really tried to clamp down on the shooters. LeBron had 12 assists for each of the last two games. Tonight, he only had 1 assist in the second half. And I know people were attacking maybe Brad Stevens for going with the switching defense and leaving Terry Rozier on an island. But they were able to get back in this game because the Cavs, the shooters, weren't able to help. So I think that might be a game plan going forward. And it may be where the Celtics are willing to let LeBron score 40 or 50. Hope he has a bad night and see if they can get back on the winning column.
I agree with everything Brian Windhorst just said. The only thing I don't like was, you know, hope he has a bad night. But understand what happened yesterday and understand the way the Cavs are built. The Cavs have spot-up shooters. Outside of LeBron James, they have spot-up shooters that aren't overly athletic. Kevin Love is not going to beat you off the dribble. He's a catch-and-shoot shooter. Kyle Korver is not going to beat you off the dribble. He is a catch-and-shoot shooter, one of the best we've ever seen. J.R. Smith is not a beat-you-off-the-dribble guy. He is a catch-and-shoot shooter. So if Boston allows LeBron James, look, you have an advantage in the post, and if you take it, we will give you as many two-pointers as you want. What you're not going to get is us doubling you, us helping, and then you can go and find these catch-and-shoot shooters who are wide open or are battling against scrambling defenses. What did we talk about yesterday? We talked about Cavalier ball movement. We talked about how that ball movement was leading to more uncontested shots. Remember, 29 uncontested shots in Game 3 for Boston. A lot of that predicated by ball movement, or by Cleveland, rather. A lot of that predicated by ball movement that was created by LeBron James driving and then being willing to kick. If they're going to give LeBron James the low post and say, here, go to work down low, score as many twos as you want, but what you're not going to get is three-pointers that are open and uncontested for guys who are only catch-and-shoot shooters, then I have to be encouraged. I have to be okay with that. Kyle Korver's not going to beat me off the dribble. If I can have a hand in his face the moment he catches the ball and not allow him to get a shot off cleanly, that is a win for me. I mean, look at the numbers that we have on last night's game and the last night's offense for Cleveland. The Cavaliers won despite assisting on just 15 of 41 made field goals, their lowest assist percentage of the season. Their lowest assist percentage of the season. The Celtics turned the Cavaliers yesterday into an isolation team, into a one-on-one team, and I have to trust that two of the next three games, Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, George Hill, are not going to beat me isolation basketball. They're not built that way. I also have to trust that Kyle Korver is not going to look like the second coming of Gary Payton again on defense. I have to trust that that's the case as well. The Celtics, I mean, look, Rachel Nichols, who is a prominent NBA reporter and studio host for ESPN, she was talking about it. She agrees with me. She's not thinking the sky is falling for Boston.
The Celtics, not really daunted by what happened here, because in both games, they felt like they were not playing up to their potential. It's one thing if you get beat when you're playing your best basketball, but they made so many mistakes here that they, yes, usually do not make at home. They had 15 missed dunks or layups. They make five of those, and they end up winning this game. So they feel like they get back in their building. They continue to force the Cavaliers into turnovers because the Cavs have gotten so sloppy with the basketball, and it's one thing when it happens here. It's entirely another thing if that happens at the Garden.
15. She just told you. 15 missed dunks or layups by the Celtics. That turned into how many points the other way in transition? Jeff Van Gundy said it during the broadcast that when you miss layups or dunks on one end, it invariably turns into layups or dunks on the other end, and you get burned by that. If the Celtics do, as she said, hit five of those shots, they score 10 more points, and they limit a possibility of 10 to 15 points for the Cavaliers that they ended up getting in transition. The Celtics shot even with Cleveland from the three-point line. They shot even with them from the foul line. They forced Cleveland into 18 turnovers. So if they go back to Boston, they continue to force turnovers, continue to limit Cleveland's ability to hit threes, which is what we've spent the whole first 6 minutes talking about. If they could force those guys into becoming isolation players, which they're not good at, then I have to walk away more encouraged going into game five than discouraged. I do. And that's exactly how I feel. The Celtics are unbeaten at home. If LeBron James is going to get 48 points playing back to the basket on Terry Rozier and shooting all twos, then I'll take that. Look at what happened with Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks were far better from two-point range than three-point range. They hit more field goals in that series than the Celtics did. But the Celtics allowed them to shoot twos because Giannis didn't go out to three, and the Celtics hit threes, and they won that series. So sure, LeBron, go have two-pointers on Terry Rozier. But what you're not going to get is us collapsing on you and allowing you to find your open buddies. That's not going to happen. It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. 802-655-6672. Joe in Essex gets in on the Town Fair Tire text line and says, Brady, could not agree with you more. Love what you said there about allowing LeBron to do what he wants down low. As long as the team isn't shooting threes, I think we're good. Go Celts. On the other side, we get one in from Nick in North Hero, who says, Brady, I disagree. I was like you. I agreed with you at first. I didn't like seeing Terry Rozier in a position to get dominated. And how much of his offensive ability is limited by having to play LeBron on defense? Well, that's a fair point, but I have a question too. And I say, I bet Brad Stevens has told Terry Rozier, look, this is what we want. Just try to make it a little bit uncomfortable for him. Make him hit a fall-away jumper, and we'll take twos. In the same way that we took twos with Giannis Antetokounmpo. If we can do that, then we can put ourselves in an opportunity to win. Again, Red Sox lineup's coming up about 3 minutes from now. I did want to get to a couple things real quick on Giants OTAs. We talked yesterday about what we noticed at Giants OTAs and what we had heard. We had heard about Eli Apple, and Eli Apple spoke about getting a second chance and spoke about being grateful to the organization and Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur said that Eli Apple has been a model citizen. Saquon Barkley talked about wanting to get better at route running. A lot of people said the right things. And really, when it comes down to it, what I'm looking for at Giants OTAs is very different than what I'm looking for at Patriots OTAs. At Patriots OTAs, I want to see specific players. I want to see what Julian Edelman looks like coming back from injury, and he looked pretty darn good today. I want to see what Braxton Berrios looks like at wide receiver. That's a team that I think is really good, that I just want to see how individual pieces fit in there. What I really want to see about the Patriots is their offensive line play, and I can't see that right now because OTAs is non-padded, so there isn't a whole lot that can be seen from the trenches. I want to see the offensive line. I want to see Danny Shelton, but I want to see individual players because I think the team is in good position. So I want to see just guys filling in spots. For the Giants, it's much different. I want to see just a culture buy-in. I want to see not so much individual players, but I want to see entire units, and I want to see leadership qualities. And reports are out about Nate Solder being a good leader on this team already 2 days in to OTAs. I want to see what he does for Eric Flowers. I want to see what he does for that entire offensive line, which was maligned all last season. I want to see the buy-in from Odell Beckham Jr. and the relationship that he forges with Saquon Barkley and how Saquon Barkley follows around Jonathan Stewart. It's less about how players perform on the field for me as much as it is the culture being built for the Giants. I think that is absolutely the most important portion of OTAs and also the most important portion of the entire offseason. I'll start worrying about the on-field production at training camp for the Giants. Now it's about language, culture, emotion, energy, and buy-in, and who are the leaders developing on this team. Eli Manning's going to be one. Landon Collins is going to be another. Who else steps up? Is it OBJ? Is it Solder? Is it Snacks Harrison on the defensive line? Who are the guys that take Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman's message and distribute it to the team? That's what I'm looking for out of Giants OTAs. It's much different than the way that Patriots OTAs looks in this very same week. All right, Red Sox baseball coming up. We'll have that pregame show for you in about 8 minutes. But now it is time to get those lineups. The Red Sox come in 32-15. The Rays 22-23. First pitch is 7:10. Tropicana Field out in St. Petersburg. Chris Sales on the mound, 4-1 with a 2.29 ERA, 87 strikeouts, still in the top five in the American League. He fanned 9 over 5 innings his last start and got the win against the A's. He pitched great against the Rays on opening day when he had 6 shutout innings. Mookie Betts is in right, 15 homers, .365 average, 11 stolen bases, one of the best in baseball. Andrew Benintendi is in left, .285. He's gotten red hot. Hanley Ramirez is at first, .271. He's gotten cold. J.D. Martinez is the DH at .343, also 15 homers. Xander Bogaerts is at short, hitting .301. Rafael Devers in the sixth spot at .237. Eduardo Nunez at second, hitting .241. Sandy Leon over .200. He's the catcher. And Jackie Bradley Jr., he's in that lineup at .165. For the Rays, Jake Farias on the mound, 3-2 with a 5.20 ERA. He's allowed 1 or fewer runs in all of his starts, all 4 of them, at Tropicana Field. Daniel Robertson leads off. He's at second. CJ Krohn, the power-hitting first baseman, hits second. Matt Duffy is the DH. Wilson Ramos is the power-hitting catcher. Willie Adames, one of the top 100 prospects in baseball, if I'm not mistaken, makes his major league debut today, and he does so at shortstop. Johnny Field is in right. Christian Arroyo, acquired in the Evan Longoria trade, he plays third and hits seventh. Rob Refsnyder, the former Yankee, is in left and hits eighth. And Malik Smith, the speedy outfielder, he hits ninth. That will do it for us. Champlain Valley game night over. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. It's 101.3 ESPN and Go Sox.
Go Lake and Wingo.
Coming up Wednesday, a guy who was once LeBron's teammate and